Something about the warning grated on her, made her want to read the letter then and there. Future me is one bossy bitch. She tore open the envelope, tossed it aside, and unfolded the letter. Yawning, she lay with her legs across the arms of the chair and began to read. Dear Una, congratulations on getting through that first leap. I know it was tough. This year will be a lot more fun, though not without some drama. I hope you got my earlier note. Maybe this time was different and you didn't cheat on Crosby. If you did, well, things will play out the way they have to. Except, I don't want them to play out that way. I want a redo. If you fucked that random guy in the club, do not tell Crosby. Sustaining a relationship from year to year is hard enough without our bullshit time sickness on top of it. And I know it feels like you just met him, but Crosby is incredible. Una's eyes drooped, her chin dipped to her chest, and the letter slipped from her fingers as she fell asleep. Chapter 9. Una woke up with a happy murmur, as if somebody was whispering her name. Except she was alone, which made her sit bolt upright. A moment to remember the where and when as she rubbed the back of her stiff neck. Acrid remnants of smoke and burnt wood tickled her nostrils. Shit, the letter. It was on the floor beside the fireplace, intact. Una slowed her panicked breathing and skimmed to where she'd left off the previous night. Crosby is incredible, thoughtful and romantic, but with an edge. Not the most ambitious, but more importantly, he has a big heart. And we have great chemistry. You've already seen how hot he is. Having an instant boyfriend may be unsettling, but I wouldn't push you to hold on to him if I didn't think he was a keeper. At least try. To make this year easier, I've included a cheat sheet, which is the smaller folded-up paper in the envelope. It includes key info on Crosby and your current friends. I tried to balance need-to-know items without giving away too much of 1990, so you can still enjoy the year whenever you leap into it. What's this about current friends, you may wonder? Just wait until you see Sin, Desi, and the rest. They put the fab in fabulous. They can't know about the time travel. Neither can Crosby. But you'll have some epic outings with them. NYC nightlife is taking a wacky turn, so get ready. That said, I do need to warn you about drugs. Una huffed and muttered, "A little late for that." I won't play mom and tell you to stay away from them. Let's be honest, if I were mom, I'd encourage careful and moderate experimentation and offer you a pot brownie to kick things off. But something recreational and fun can easily become a dark habit. Being young again after a year trapped in a much older body, you'll be tempted to go wild. Just remember you often prefer to hide rather than tackle problems head on. Be careful about using drugs to avoid things. Enjoy the year, but not too much. I also need to warn you about sex. You got an IUD years ago, so you don't need to worry about pregnancy. But AIDS and other STDs are prevalent. You and Crosby have been tested and are both clean. But if you have sex with anyone else, condoms are a must. Another drawback to this year, lo-fi tech. Hope you didn't get too hooked on your gadgets. As you've noticed, there's no Kenzie. He's busy being a kid in elementary school. You'll miss him, but his absence could be your chance to get closer to mom. Since he won't be around to handle the financial nitty-gritty, the Rubin brothers at Chestnut Investment Services will do so in the interim. Their card is on your desk. You're still responsible for the binder, though, so be sure to update it accordingly. Fill in everything you remember for each year, including this one. Hint, ditch any remaining Japanese holdings before that bubble bursts. Every leap will have its advantages and disadvantages, things you'll gain and lose, relationships, youth, modern conveniences, etc. No year will be perfect. But I do think this year will be better if you have a little more love in your life. And boy, does Crosby love you, and vice versa. I hope you can make things work with him. Please try. Love, me. P.S. Crosby is taking you out for your birthday dinner tonight, so brush up on those notes before you see him. As she lowered the letter, there was a faint pounding behind her forehead. A drumline in the distance headed her way. She stood and checked the mantle for the envelope to read the cheat sheet. It wasn't there. Scrambling to her knees, she searched under the chair. No envelope. Oh no. Please, no. The drummers neared, their persistent rhythm echoing through her skull. A glance at the fireplace, a triangle of white amidst the ashes. Fuck! Una pulled out the corner of the envelope, but the rest was in cinders. She wanted to bang her head against the brick fireplace to punish herself for being so careless. Again. Instead, laughter bubbled out of her. Dark. Bitter. I'm such an idiot. Arms around her stomach, kneeling on the carpet, she giggled helplessly. Once she caught her breath, she stood, cringing as she put weight on her bad ankle. Now what? The room held no further answers. A possible solution came to her. Mom. Madeline might not be able to fill her in on the intimate details, but she could provide basic information on Crosby. Hopefully enough to get Una through this birthday dinner. In the living room was a cordless phone / answering machine combo. A red light blinked, indicated a new message. She pressed play. A chorus of happy birthday was followed by, Una, darling, it's your mother. I hope you had an easy leap. I went up to Vermont for a few days with Leonard. He's a sweetheart. I'll tell you all about him. And we were supposed to be back today, but got snowed in. It's been quite an adventure. The power went out last night and phones are still down. We had to drive 5 miles to find a payphone that works. Roads are a mess, but we should be able to return tomorrow. I'm sorry to miss your birthday, but I'm sure Crosby has something fabulous planned. I'll call again when we get home. Oh, I snuck a birthday gift for you behind the cushions of the gray sofa. Love you. So much for that. Una ransacked the house for any hint of Crosby or her new friends. There were no photos, no notes, no phone numbers, nothing. Had it all been in the cheat sheet? All she found during her search were reminders that she'd traveled back in time. Her clunkier electronics involved more wires. The music room was still dominated by a record collection, but also contained shelves of CDs and cassettes. In place of her screening room was a den with a boxy television and racks of VHS tapes. She didn't even own a computer. Maybe lo-fi will be better, she mused, examining a Jaws laser disc. Getting her homework out of the way, Una spent hours poring over the binder. She flipped to various years and filled in gaps in the notes. That done, she reviewed 1991's financial instructions and followed Qualcomm's predicted upward trajectory from its December IPO. Buy at $16, hold until after third split in December 1999, sell in March 2000 at $70, buy again at $13 in August 2002, wait until fourth split in 2004, sell at $78 in 2014. Later, as it got dark outside, Una fastened the clasp of her mother's birthday gift, a gold necklace with a pendant made of interlocking gears and other clock parts. It dipped below her collarbone and complemented her emerald green velvet dress and red hair, which she wore slicked back, a crimson curtain shimmering down her back. The watch from Dale was in a jewelry box, but after seeing it in a display case for a year, she felt it was safer not to wear it. She also found the jacket from Dale, its sleeves stiffer and the leather less worn than it had been when she last saw it. While she was pleased it fit her again, she opted for a more formal wool coat that night. I can't tell you where we're going, except it's somewhere special, Crosby had said when he called her that afternoon. Another surprise? Why not? Last year's loneliness was still fresh in her mind, so Una promised herself she'd try with Crosby, especially if he was the C in her tattoo. This was her chance to have everything, youth, money, and a man who loved her. A man earlier Una already loved back. This Una just had to catch up. True, her negligence with the cheat sheet made tonight a step shy of a blind date. But how hard could it be to pretend to know a man intimately familiar with her? To pretend to be in love with him? Maybe she wouldn't have to pretend for long. Maybe she'd be smitten by the end of the night. But what if I'm not? If only she could talk to Kenzie. If only Kenzie wasn't currently in grade school. Or Wayne, or Pam, or another friend from her past. How long before I'm reunited with any of them? And what if I can't find any of my current friends? The doorbell rang as she swiped on a final coat of mascara. When she stepped outside, Crosby swept her into a tight embrace, smelling of cold air, mint gum, and sharp, citrusy cologne.
"I was worried about you today," he murmured into her hair. "I thought you might cancel on dinner."
"I'm so sorry about last night." So much weight and sincerity in the words, her eyes glossy with tears.
"Hey, it's okay. You weren't feeling good and wanted to be alone. Gotta respect the birthday girl's wishes. Now let's get on with the main event. Surprise number one."
He stepped aside and swept an arm out. A black limousine was parked in front of her house, sleek and shiny as a panther.
"Wow, you don't exaggerate when you say special."
Una gaped as the uniformed driver opened the door for them. They settled into the leather seats and the car pulled away.
"Here, hold these."
Crosby handed her two champagne flutes and reached for an ice bucket with a bottle of Moët & Chandon.
"This is so thoughtful,
but it isn't even a major birthday. I'm 27, not 30 or 40. Except on the inside, she was 20, so she was pleased.
"Why this special treatment?"
"Because every birthday should be special. And I wanted you to know your boyfriend is so fucking cool. He planned an unforgettable night for you."
The cork popped. "I get to spend the rest of my life with the coolest guy on the planet." She recalled the weight of the leather armor Dale had given her, the armor of his embrace. Una shook off the memory.
"To an unforgettable night," she toasted.
"I also got you this. It's something small that made me think of you."
He handed her a white box that fit in her palm. Inside was a miniature red sports car made of etched crystal.
"It's a little red Corvette, like the Prince song," he explained. "I thought you'd get a kick out of it."
"It's adorable. Thank you. I have the perfect place to put it, too."
She gave him a quick peck on the cheek and drained her glass. Her mouth was dry, and the champagne did little to abate her thirst. It should have been easy to accept the romance of these gestures, but the limo felt more like a giant moving coffin. All this unspoken pressure for the night to be perfect, for her to be perfect. How was that possible? How many leaps had she made before meeting Crosby? And what had she done, seen, learned by then? Was that version of her funnier, kinder, wiser? And what kind of person was Crosby? How would she get to know him without giving herself away? Conversation was minimal during the drive to Manhattan. Instead, they watched the city skyline. The cold made the buildings gleam like they were made of gemstones, and the resurrected Twin Towers filled Una with sad wonder. Up to the west side, to the edge of Central Park, the car pulled up to a red awning surrounded by trees wrapped in a multitude of white Christmas lights, a blanket of electric snow.
"Tavern on the Green? No way," she whispered.
Una took slow, reverential steps inside the restaurant, through a wood-paneled foyer, into a mirrored hallway. Her darting eyes took in her multiple selves. What if each reflection was actually a separate version of her, trapped in time? All 27 years old externally, all with cherry hair and a green dress. But while Una on this side of the glass was 20 internally, maybe that other Una was 42, and that one 37, and that one 73. Maybe each Una had a different chronology. Maybe one was living her life in order,
If only this Una could find that one and swap places with her.
The hallway led to a dining room with enormous chandeliers suspended like earrings on a pretty bohemian girl. Heads turned as they were seated. From the neck down, Una and Crosby blended with the conservatively dressed diners, but their primary colored hair made the duo unmistakably other. Patrons stared without staring, peripheral glances that pretended not to linger, except for a little girl in a lavender princess dress who gaped with open-mouthed wonder. The girl raised a bandaged finger to point at them, and an adult hand slapped it away in admonishment.
Ah, so this was how being the center of attention felt.
The previous year, she'd treated Kenzie and Madeline to meals at some of the city's finest restaurants. But if they got any lingering looks, Kenzie had always been their target. With his youth, striking bone structure, and vibrant wardrobe. At the time, Una had felt mild envy at being relegated to the background. She'd forgotten the spotlight's flip side. Stares came with judgment. For every gaze that admired, another assessed, criticized, made assumptions. She shifted in her seat. If only they were in a cozier, more casual setting. A dive bar or diner. Not this historic Epicurean behemoth, and not a restaurant that had connotations with Dale.
You know, when I was a teenager,
she pretended to look at her menu.
I used to dream about coming here.
A puzzled smile from Crosby.
Why do you think I chose this place? I know it's not to celebrate a record deal, but...
I told you about that?
She fired out the question before she could hold it back, an errant arrow that flew wide of its target.
Of course.
What else did I tell you about the band?
What else did I tell you about Dale? Had she played down her depth of feeling for her first love? Dismiss him as a passing teenage crush? Maybe so many years had elapsed before leaping into 1990, she hadn't needed to downplay it. Maybe by the time she met Crosby, she seldom thought of Dale.
What did you tell me about the band?
Crosby repeated.
Did you get sudden amnesia or something?
His smile wavered. A waiter came over before she could answer. They ordered shrimp cocktail, steak, and a bottle of Cabernet.
So what's up with you tonight?
Crosby took her hand across the table, ran a thumb across the inside of her wrist, over the hourglass tattoo.
I'm sure the hangover is part of it, but something else is off. It's almost as if...
His eyes dropped down to the tablecloth.
As if you don't like me as much anymore.
Fixing her mouth into a tight smile, she tried not to betray the ugly, twisting emotions inside her as she searched his face for something to ignite a connection. At least he was nice to look at, with translucent, paper-white skin and a cool indigo pompadour that recalled 60s-era Elvis. The square jaw, wide, dark eyes, Roman nose, all added up to a geometrically attractive face. Even his scars, one dash above his left eyebrow and another across his chin, contributed to his allure. It was easy to appreciate him on a superficial level, but conjuring genuine emotions? For now, she'd have to fake it.
Of course I like you.
She placed her fingers over his and squeezed them.
I more than like you.
Nope, she couldn't force out those other words.
Last night messed with my head. A lot. And I'm still getting over it. But it's also the new year. I feel all this pressure to make it great, better than the last one. And I always have a tough time on my birthday. It's not about getting older or anything like that. I can't really explain it.
She could, but why ruin dinner?
You warned me all about that. How you get moody and distant at the beginning of each year. I thought something like this might get you out of your funk.
A gesture to their grand surroundings. Was last year's Una worthy of Crosby? Because surely this year's Una wasn't. When their wine was served, Una gulped hers without tasting it. Uncomfortable silence fell over them like snow. They regarded their ornate surroundings, searching for something to comment on. The room had a soft glow from the chandeliers. Their silverware and plates gleamed as if underwater. "Say something." Yet neither one did. A pull at the back of her throat. Her fake smiles weren't passing for the real thing, but Crosby didn't prod. Instead, he reassured her with careful glances that said he'd listen, that he'd understand. Una didn't trust those glances. No way he'd understand if she gave voice to the unspoken between them. The waiter brought over their appetizers, and they bit into giant shrimp. Maybe good food would take the edge off their disappointment. "I have to turn this around. I'll die if this dinner gets any more uncomfortable." "So, you know how the new year is a new beginning and all that?" she asked. The corners of Crosby's mouth twitched, uncertain.
"Sure."
"Well, with my birthday, new beginnings are magnified for me. Can we try something?" His fork paused halfway to his mouth. A crimson dollop of cocktail sauce dropped onto the white tablecloth.
"Depends on what that something is."
"Can we pretend this is our first date?"
"What?"
He set the fork down. Eyes on the centerpiece, she coaxed her voice into a breezy lilt. "I know it's silly, but I thought it might be fun to, you know, pretend like we just met and it's our first date. Kind of get to know each other all over again." She pressed her fork tines into the pads of her fingers.
"Oh."
A shrug and his body relaxed.
"I mean, I guess. I thought you were going to say you wanted us to see other people or something."
"No, God, no. I have no interest in seeing other people." The bigger concern was sorting out her interest in him. "I just thought, just for tonight, we could have a blank slate. Is that too weird?" Head tilted, he squinted in exaggerated concentration.
"Too weird. On the grand scale of weirdness, this ranks fairly low. What the hell? Let's try it."
"Awesome." The word came out in a breathy sigh.
"So how do you want to do this?"
"I think we just dive in. Like, how did you get those scars on your face?" He rubbed the one above his eyebrow, smirked.
"I walked into a glass door."
"Were you drunk?" He was taken aback for a beat, but resumed his role.
"No, I was six, playing with a neighbor's kid, running back and forth between their living room and backyard. Someone closed the sliding doors when I wasn't looking. I went crashing through them."
"Yikes."
"Yeah, it was pretty scary at the time. But I ended up with a nice insurance settlement that my parents invested for me, which is how I can afford a decent Manhattan apartment on a retail salary. What about you? What's the story behind your tattoo?"
"What?" A glance at her wrist, as if the ink would reveal a clue. Maybe this wasn't the best idea. "I would love to tell you," she coiled her lips seductively. "But that's something I never reveal on a first date." Their steaks were brought out, and Crosby ordered a second bottle of wine. "Let's see," Una continued. So many things she wanted to know, deeper questions to ask, but she had to maintain their first date role play. "Who are your five favorite bands or singers?" Restrained impatience tightened his face, his eyes asking, "How long do we have to keep this up?"
"Bowie, New York Dolls, Sisters of Mercy, Depeche Mode, Bob Dylan."
"Bob Dylan? But he can't sing."
"Says the girl who loves Lou Reed."
The glint in his eyes was playful yet barbed. "So you work in retail. Do you want to own your own store one day?" she asked. He hesitated, as if he had to talk himself into continuing the charade.
"I don't think so. Working at Vamps is fun, and St. Mark's Place is awesome, but it's not like retail is any great passion of mine."
As Una listened,
She tried to calculate a formula for the quickest way to fall in love. How could you apply mathematical logic to something that defied numbers? Good-looking man plus fancy restaurant plus wine plus friendly banter might not equal a pounding heart and undying devotion. Love at first sight was too ambitious, even if it had gone that way with Dale. She and Crosby exchanged polite, bewildered smiles, her secret a barrier between them. What had her first kiss with Crosby been like? No way had it sent her into a similar freefall as Dale's. But a new set of firsts with Crosby awaited. A new first date, in progress. A new first kiss. A new first fight. Other firsts, both good and bad. But weren't the earliest days of a relationship some of the best? Sure, technically this was a continuation, but she'd also experienced the novelty of their relationship, even if it was one-sided. Maybe I've been looking at this all wrong.
I guess it's my turn to ask questions, Crosby said. Do you like your job at... What is it you do again?
His delivery wooden. Crap. She stalled by cutting and chewing a large bite of steak. I have a trust fund, so I'm lucky. I don't have to have a regular job. Maybe that answer would fly. It didn't.
A trust fund? I thought you're a personal financial advisor.
He narrowed an eye. Damn, that incinerated cheat sheet. Yeah, I do that too. Not a complete lie, since she advised herself. On the side. I've always liked numbers and seem to have a knack for it.
Did you keep the trust fund a secret because you thought I'd take advantage of you?
Of course not.
Because I'd never do that. If you remember, you had to talk me into accepting that Vespa you got me for my birthday.
I remember, she said through dry lips.
I don't care about having lots of money. I have enough to be comfortable, and I don't have expensive tastes. Tonight's an exception, and more for you. I think wanting more than I have would just make me unhappy.
A stirring within her, a whisper of tenderness. That's a very Buddhist way of looking at things. She tried to numb the pinpricks of shame with more wine. So if making a lot of money isn't your thing, and retail isn't your thing, what's your big passion? The hurt and suspicion in his eyes softened. His face flushed and he shifted an eyebrow, implying he didn't need to vocalize his great passion, because he was looking at it. No question about it. There was no way she deserved a man like Crosby, and she had no idea how she'd hold on to him. That was a lovely dinner. Thank you, she said as they exited the restaurant.
My pleasure.
He slipped an arm around her waist.
I'm crazy about you. You know that?
I'm starting to get an inkling. The end of her sentence was muffled as Crosby pressed his mouth against hers. It wasn't as intense as kissing the blue-eyed stranger. But then again, drug-fueled kisses with sexy strangers will intrinsically be more intense. Even so, Crosby's kiss contained something more important, a profound feeling, a promise of devotion. Let's get a cab to your place, Una murmured.
We have the limo until midnight.
Back in the car, he called to the driver.
Could you take us around the park for a little while and put up the privacy window?
Yes, sir.
The tinted divider rolled up. Are you sure he can't see us?
Are you sure it matters?
Crosby pulled her in. He kissed her beneath her jaw, then scraped his teeth along her neck. An instant heat coursed through her. How perplexing. He knew her body so well when she was exploring his for the first time. As the car rolled through Central Park, Crosby's touch grew less tentative. He stretched her out beneath him on the dark leather, his ribs and hip bones pressing against her. This made her open her mouth wider, inviting his tongue. He matched her fervor and reached beneath the hem of her dress, the tips of his fingers cold against her thighs, tickling her skin, growing warmer as they explored higher. They paused at her underwear.
Even though caution had eluded her the previous night, the dangers of AIDS and other STDs popped into her head. What if she picked up something nasty from last night's indiscretion? It wouldn't be fair to put Crosby at risk. "Do you have a condom?" she asked. He sat up with a start.
"Have you been taken over by a pod person or something? We never use condoms."
"Shit." Una propped herself up on her elbows. "I just thought..." "There's no harm in being extra careful." He rubbed his forehead, trying to make sense of the soured moment.
"We just got tested last month."
"Shit, shit, shit."
"Oh."
His nod was slow as the grim truth emerged.
"You fucked someone else."
It would have been more insulting for her to deny it. She tilted her head downward, affirmation enough.
"Are you bored with me?"
he asked. "No, of course not."
"Or am I too much of a nice guy?"
Slumped in his seat, his long legs angled like an insect's.
"When you told me about the creeps you've been with, who lied and took advantage of you, I thought you'd be happy with someone more decent."
As the car moved through the park, streetlights reflected off his pale face, alternating with patches of darkness. Each time Una saw him in the light, his eyes grew shinier and filled with more resignation. "You're not too much of a nice guy, and I am happy with you." Her voice was strangled, desperate. It was like holding on to a ledge with the tips of her fingers.
"Then can you explain why you cheated on me?"
Tears trickled down his face. Crosby pushed a button to lower the privacy partition.
"We can leave the park now,"
he told the driver.
"There'll be two more stops. The nearest subway station, then back to Brooklyn."
"No problem,"
the driver nodded. "Crosby, please." A sick plummeting like the ledge had given way. "You have to let me explain."
"It doesn't matter."
He made no move to wipe his damp face, stared straight ahead. "It mattered up until 5 minutes ago. You can't all of a sudden stop caring."
"Up until 5 minutes ago? I didn't know you cheated on me."
She opened and closed her mouth. Only one option left. "Listen, this is going to sound like the most insane thing ever, but..." The words spilled out in a jumble as she told him about her time traveling while they exited the park and drove down Fifth Avenue. "It would mean starting over in a way, and forgiving me for last night, which I realize is asking a lot." A hesitant peek at his profile as the car pulled up to the 57th Street station. "Look at me, please." Cold air swept over them as Crosby opened the door. He turned his head toward her but kept his eyes down.
"The car's paid for, except for the tip. You can give him this."
A $20 bill placed in her lap. "Wait," she pleaded. He had one leg out of the car. "There has to be something I can do." One final look at her, but there was nothing behind his eyes.
"Please don't come to the store anymore."
A crack in his voice, and he turned away.
"And don't call me."
His shoulders shook as he exited the limo. Chapter 10. Although, as it turned out, her one-night stand left her free of STDs, she did wake up the following morning with the flu.
"At least let me bring you some soup," Madeline urged when she called later that day. "It's only your second leap, and I don't like the idea of you being alone."
"I might as well get used to it, right? Sorry, I'm just not up for company."
But the doorbell rang an hour later as her mother arrived bearing flowers, Tylenol, juice, and soup. She wore an electric blue coat over a lime green dress, both padded at the shoulders, giving her top half a boxy silhouette, and her curly hair was sprayed and teased, bigger than ever.
"I don't care if you're contagious, I'm coming in for a hug."
Una didn't resist and rested her head on Madeline's heavily reinforced shoulder.
"Thanks for not listening and coming over anyway."
For once, she wasn't being sarcastic. She stepped back to get a better look at her mother.
"You're a lot younger than the last time I saw you."
Yet she also looked
oddly older in her mid-40s than she would in her 60s. Her face wasn't pulled taut, so her pre-Botox forehead could furrow with worry, and the groove between her eyebrows deepened, still a brow lift away from eradication.
"But I bet I was still a foxy mama, right?"
Madeline gave a little hip wiggle.
"Always.
Find something trashy for us to watch on TV while I make you some tea." With a wink, she headed off to the kitchen. They settled in the living room watching the Sally Jesse Raphael show. Una on the pale gray sofa cocooned in a blanket, an untouched mug of tea on the glass coffee table, marginally soothed as her mother brushed her hair.
"It's gotten so long. Do you think about cutting it?"
Una shrugged.
"The last thing I'm thinking about is my hair."
During a commercial break, Madeline asked,
"How's Crosby?"
"We broke up."
"Oh. Did you end it?"
Her shoulders slumped.
"Mom, I love you, but please don't push. Talking about it isn't going to help."
Because talking would mean lying, or confessing the actual despicable reason Crosby left her, and reliving the confusion and humiliation. Problem was, not talking also made her feel shitty, an unbearable heaviness pressing and pressing.
"It doesn't matter who ended it. It wasn't going to work, and it was stupid of me to try. The me he knew isn't the me I am now."
A final smoothing of Una's hair, and Madeline put down the brush.
"So what are you going to do?"
"Mope some more and then get on with things, I guess. It's weird. Like I'm grieving for someone I never knew, because I won't get to know him. At least with Dale, I know what I lost. With Crosby, it doesn't make sense for me to be sad about him."
"The day love makes sense. Check the pork chops for feathers."
A weak grin at her own corny joke. Una twisted the satin hem of her blanket.
"Last year, I was in denial about the time travel stuff. But now? Now that I believe it, it's different. I have to figure out how to manage this. The more I think about it, the more I realize I won't be able to have anything lasting in my life. Any boyfriend, band, friend. It all comes with an expiration date. What's even the point of getting attached to anyone, anything, or even getting up in the morning?"
"That's always been the biggest struggle for you."
Una shed the blanket and sat up straighter.
"Of course. Why didn't I ask you right away? You've been with chronologically younger versions of me, but also older ones. Did I ever figure it out?"
"Not what causes the leaps. But how to manage them? I suppose. As much as any of us figure out life.
Do I ever find any kind of stability? Or do I live life year after year like some kind of existential hobo?"
Teeth bared in a grimace, Madeline said,
"You know I can't tell you.
Some years will be more volatile than others, but you have me for all the stability you want."
The way she squeezed Una's hands begged for no more questions. On TV, a woman with badly permed hair and a missing front tooth sobbed. Sally Jesse crouched beside her, the red of her lipstick, a perfect match to her glasses, making a sympathetic O. Una took the remote and muted the sound.
"Mom, you know I love you, but I need something more."
A tug of war took place behind Madeline's eyes, and her chest inflated with a deep breath.
"Okay, I can tell you this. You like to assign a theme to some years."
"A theme? Like a prom theme? Like 1991 Under the Stars?"
"Not quite. Well, for example, the theme of one year was travel. You found such a sense of peace exploring foreign countries."
"I can't even imagine. Everything feels like a foreign country right now."
"I know, but you'll figure it out eventually."
"Will I?"
Once she recovered from the flu, Una still couldn't shake off her muddled emotions.
She'd known Crosby for less than 24 hours before she wrecked their relationship. Not enough time to reestablish true intimacy. But she'd had a taste of it. A good man had gone from adoring her to despising her in the span of one night. Something precious was now destroyed and unknowable. Guilt and disappointment haunted her for letting Crosby and her 1990 self down. Then again, why had 1990 Una left her letter so close to the fireplace if she knew the cheat sheet would get incinerated? Was a flimsy warning on the envelope supposed to be enough to prevent that? And why go to the club with Crosby on New Year's Eve if she knew she'd end up having sex with another man? Had she really believed a post-it note could change her fate? If this Una had let last year's self down, it was because earlier Una had set her up to fail. Either way, despite the promises of a year full of fabulous people and wild outings, Una found herself alone, unsure of how or when she'd see any of her friends again, hesitant to venture into New York's nightlife scene in search of them. Instead, she kept to a familiar limited radius. Though after a year spent being 51, Una felt revitalized physically. Her bones and muscles were stronger, and her skin had a flawless sheen. Last year's fatigue was replaced with an urge to move, 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 as if small motors powered her limbs. She expelled extra energy by taking walks in Prospect Park, which were typically soothing, but now made her restless, uneasy. People gawked at her, candy-colored hair being uncommon in the early 90s and rarely seen in Brooklyn. 1990 Una must have wanted that kind of attention, but 1991 Una couldn't handle it, so she went to a salon in the East Village. "I'd like something that'll make me look like a different person," she told the stylist, pointing to a wall covered in black and white photos of old Hollywood starlets. She added, "Like that black bob with bangs." One Louise Brooks coming up. Once Una's hair was chopped off, colored, shampooed, and blow-dried into a sleek, new style, she didn't look like a new person, only like herself wearing a flapper wig. "It suits you," the stylist told Una. Did it? She didn't know what truly suited her anymore. As she was about to leave the salon, the stylist called out, "Hang on," and handed Una a glossy electric green postcard. On it was an image of a bald man with flower petals for eyelashes and an X of black masking tape over his mouth. Glittery blue letters spelled out Soma 3000 above his head. "My brother's a club promoter. This new weekly party at Antenna should be pretty hot. I bet you could use a fun night out." Outside, Una gave the flyer a closer look. "I could use a fun night out." The dress code demanded fab, funky, or freakish attire. Unsure if anything in her current wardrobe would qualify, she went shopping. Obeying Crosby's wishes, she bypassed St. Mark's Place to avoid the store where he worked, swallowing bad feelings and a lump in her throat. Instead, she went west on 8th Street, past countless shoe stores and shops selling bongs, Zippos, and other tobacco-slash-cannabis paraphernalia, until she reached a window display whose mannequins were adorned with vibrant, skimpy clothing. Patricia Field. She entered the basement level of the colorful store. 10 feet away, sifting through a rack of rhinestone belts, a tall black woman with spindly arms and a pastel pink afro wig greeted her with a grin. "Look at Miss Thing and her new haircut." "How'd you know?" Una put a hand up to her freshly shorn hair. "Because no wig looks that good except the ones we sell upstairs. And I know you don't buy those. Now, are you gonna give me some sugar or do I have to come over there?" She cautiously approached the woman, who pulled her into a suffocating hug. "What happened to you? You haven't been out in ages. I was starting to think you and Crosby ran off and took that trip to Japan you're always talking about."
Did I just find one of my friends? "Crosby and I actually broke up. Then I got sick. I've been taking some time."
"Oh, baby girl. What a shame."
She scooped Una into another hug, enveloped her in a cloud of perfume that smelled of lilacs and baby powder.
I thought the two of you were the real deal. He didn't play around on you, did he? Because Jackie Hammer has a mobbed-up uncle, we can get his kneecaps busted if he needs to be taught a lesson.
No, Crosby was great. It just didn't work out. After the breakup, I needed to be a hermit for a while. And now I need to stop moping. She fished out the Soma 3000 flyer. I was thinking of going to this tomorrow.
The new night at Antenna? There's nothing to think about.
She zigzagged an admonishing finger.
You're going, period. We're all getting ready at Jenny's. Now let's find you something to wear.
A man behind the register called out.
Hey, Sin, do we have the snakeskin pants in an 8?
We're out of 8s, but should get more next week.
Sin? One of the names in the letter?
What is it, sugar?
Her eyes ran up and down Una's body.
You got skinnier. Breakups are the best diet, right?
Grinning, she answered. Right. So is the flu. What a delightful surprise to stumble across one of her friends.
I bet this would look great on you.
She held up a mini dress made of fuchsia mirrored tiles. Una followed Sin around the store, collecting bright, skimpy outfits before modeling them for her friend. In the end, she settled on the fuchsia dress, but still bought the other clothes, in case Sin worked on commission. Is that why she's friends with me? Because I buy lots of clothes? Is that why I buy the clothes? So she'll be friends with me? It didn't matter. It was worth it to find someone allegedly familiar. Someone who didn't accuse Una of behaving like a different version of herself. Maybe she could actually carry over a friendship from the previous year.
So we're meeting up at Jenny's between 9 and 10, then heading over to Antenna around 11. We'll be going all night, so take your disco nap. Oh, Jenny just moved. I'll give you her new address.
Sin scrawled it on the back of Una's receipt. I don't know. I'm still... Maybe I'll just meet you all there. While she was pleased about this reunion, the thought of trying to pass as her 1990 self to an entire group of people was nerve-wracking.
You've been away too long. Now you know I won't come to Brooklyn to drag your ass out, but I expect to see you at Jenny's. She has a special treat planned, so you better be there.
When Una got home, there was a message on the answering machine from her mother. Just wanted to see how you were feeling. Call me, kiddo. I miss you. But Una didn't call her back. Instead, she went upstairs to try on all her new clothes again. Chapter 11. Jenny's ground floor studio was in a rundown sliver of a sooty gray building on Avenue B, next door to a red brick tenement with broken windows. This was years before gentrification would take full effect in the East Village. This Alphabet City still had drug dealers on corners outside of bodegas, hunched over junkies weaving up and down the street, and cracked sidewalks decorated with debris. Empty cigarette packs, styrofoam cups, used condoms, broken bottles. Some would have been scared off, but Una had a bystander's appreciation for the urban grit. Knowing how New York would be transformed in the ensuing decades, the cleanup, the influx of money, the reduction in crime, made this version surreal and cinematic. Though the man with a bandana tied around his face like a cartoon bandit, casually strolling down the block with a baseball bat, was very real indeed. A reminder Una wasn't watching actors on a screen, but real people from behind a transparent and very breakable taxi window. As if to punctuate the thought, there was a shatter of breaking glass in the distance. Almost musical, like out-of-tune wind chimes, followed by a volley of shouts in Spanish. She paid the driver and got out of the car. Maybe going to Jenny's wasn't the best idea. Not because of the neighborhood, but more Una's inability to shake off her sense of being an imposter. Granted, she wasn't a phony as much as circumstantial amnesiac. Even so, the idea of passing as someone who knew these people, who were strangers to her current self, caused a tightening at her temples. She'd failed with Crosby. What made her think she'd do any better with her friends? Pessimism notwithstanding, she went to the door and rang the bell.
A drag queen with a blonde bouffant and a cigarette dangling from the corner of her mouth answered the door. The thump of house music blared behind her.
Well, well, well. It's about time you showed your face again. Love the whole silent film star meets space disco look. I have those in red.
She nodded at Una's white go-go boots.
Come on in. Desi's mixing up margaritas. I'll take your coat.
Here goes something.
Look who I found loitering,
the queen announced Una.
Dressed like that, I'm amazed you didn't get picked up for solicitation. Just kidding, dollface.
A slender man with olive skin and dark, slicked-back hair handed her a hurricane glass filled with frothy blue liquid. He stood on tiptoes to kiss her cheek. You're just jealous because you could never afford me. Una instinctively understood a certain amount of attitude was required. She regarded the cocktail. Would alcohol make her behave more like the Una they knew, or less? I guess we'll find out. She took a long sip of the drink, which tasted like oranges and lighter fluid.
Coat's not off and the claws are already out. Welcome back, girl.
Sin swooped in and gave her air kisses on both cheeks. She'd swapped her pink afro wig for a glossy purple page boy. A buxom brunette with her hair in large curlers stepped out of the bathroom. Sorry things with Crosby didn't work out. She had a thick Long Island accent.
Have some couth, lady,
scolded the blonde bouffant. Una glanced between the two of them. Which one was Jenny?
Hey, Jenny,
she called out.
I'm standing right here. I don't know why you're shouting.
Okay, Jenny is the blonde bouffant. Who's the brunette?
I love what you've done with the place.
Una glanced at the apartment's bare-bones decor, gray, boxy furniture framed by walls like cracked eggshells. Not an interior design any normal person would compliment, so she drowned the idiocy of her statement in several long swallows of her drink. Desi, Sin, and the brunette cackled with laughter.
You can shove your sarcasm right up your ass, Missy,
said Jenny, as ash from her cigarette dropped onto her chest and she flicked it away.
Hey, our girl is nursing a broken heart. Give her a break. She can be as bitchy as she wants.
Sin kneeled over a coffee table, cutting up pale yellow powder on a D-Lite CD case.
Oh, yeah? What's your excuse, Cynthia?
Hand on hip, Desi went around the room with a blender pitcher and refilled everyone's glasses. He purposefully bumped Sin, causing her to scatter some of the powder.
Careful with that, Sin. I'm not getting more till next week.
Jenny turned to Una.
Wait till you try this shit. It's gonna blow your mind.
The brunette squeezed Una's shoulder and rolled her eyes. Oh my God. She drew out the word God. All week long, it's all we've heard about. Like Special K is the best thing since E. Patting a spot on the sofa beside him, Desi said,
Una, come sit next to Daddy and tell us what's new.
She perched on the edge of the cushion. What's new with me? Tongue numb, brain going fuzzy, she kept sipping her blue drink. Let's see. Crosby found out I fucked another guy and dumped me. That's new. So nonchalant, like mentioning a dentist's appointment.
Shut your mouth,
said Sin, hers hanging open.
I assumed you broke it off.
The brunette, sitting at a card table covered with cosmetics and balled up tissues, paused while applying glue to a false eyelash the size of a tarantula.
I thought you were serious about Crosby.
I was. It was a one-time thing. I didn't even get his name.
God, I'm such a slut.
Una touched her hot cheeks, fingers cold from the frosted cocktail glass. Her buzz softened the edges of the room, softened everything.
You're not a slut, sugar. You were just ready to move on.
Sin rubbed her arm.
You always said you weren't sure if you could settle down with Crosby.
All right, kids, gather round.
Jenny cut a 3-inch segment off a drinking straw and gestured at the CD case with pale yellow lines of powder.
You're up first, Una.
Am I really going to do this? Una took the straw and paused. There was a time such a scene would have horrified her. She'd made her disgust plain any time she caught a whiff of marijuana on Madeline's clothes. And what about the way she came down on Corey when she caught him with cocaine? What would either of them say if they saw her now? Not to mention Dale. What did it matter? Nobody was around to judge or admonish her. So she leaned over and snorted a line. The ketamine smelled soapy and had a bitter aftertaste. After she inhaled, there was a roar in her ears like a plane taking off. She returned the straw to Jenny, settled back on the couch, and closed her eyes. Her body floated up to the ceiling, past the ceiling, through each floor of the battered building, up to the smoggy city stars. She hovered in a tactile darkness, a velvet she could put her hands through, dotted with pinpricks of light. All sound became muffled and garbled, like deep voices underwater.
Beep, beep, beep.
Can someone pass me my pager? Jenny asked. We gotta go. My customers are waiting.
How much time had passed? Una opened her eyes, but her lids were heavy, like waking up from sedation. A white-hot light pierced her retinas, a bare bulb dangling from a rusted chain.
Don't move, I'm almost finished, said Desi.
There was a feathery dabbing at Una's mouth, then a finger pressing along the outer ridge of one eye socket, then the other.
The breakup has been great for your body, but your makeup skills have gone to shit. Have you forgotten everything I taught you about contouring? Okay, open.
She squinted as Desi brushed loose powder along the bridge of her nose.
And she's back.
He held up a hand mirror.
Jesus, how long was I out?
Una did a slow wink to take in the peacock effect he'd created, replete with blue and gold stick-on rhinestones and tiny green feathers glued along her lash line. Her cheekbones appeared higher, her nose thinner. She was a dazed, half-starved, glamorous cartoon rendering of herself.
Just tell me you love it and get your coat on.
It's amazing.
Who was this wide-eyed, spaced-out girl staring back at her? Another series of beeps as Jenny's pager went off.
Come on, Una. Unless you want to party with my cats, you better mosey.
Una grabbed her coat and followed the others out. They arrived in the meatpacking district. Their destination, a graffiti-covered, squat beige building with columns two stories high flanking the entrance and arched, bricked-over windows. Where some of the other nearby clubs were converted slaughterhouses and fostered a BDSM scene, Antenna was a converted bank and dedicated itself to more diverse debauchery. The club was reaching capacity as they entered. Some of the original interior had been preserved, including marble plinths dotting the cavernous main room, a teller window repurposed as a coat check, and a massive silver vault door. A pulsing throng of colorful bodies moved in choreographed chaos to a techno remix of a Madonna song, its bass so heavy it pulsed through Una's fingertips. Streams of tiny bubbles blew over the horde like iridescent snowfall. A giant panda in a sparkling red vest waved at Una.
Are you real?
She asked.
I'm Johnny Panda. Of course I'm real, he answered. I bring joy and delight. Wanna hug?
Arms stretched wide, she let herself be embraced by the panda and was flooded with affection and relief.
Everything is gonna be okay, right?
She asked.
Of course, sweetie.
An oversized paw patted her head.
Nothing bad ever happens here.
And nothing I do this year will matter, because I know how it all turns out. Thank you.
Una stepped back and hurried to catch up to her friends. She wove through a motley crew, some in goth and bondage gear, others in striped Adidas jackets and soccer shoes, some in drag pageant regalia, others in little more than body paint. Jenny was chatting with two teenagers dressed as Catholic schoolgirls wearing small backpacks. A nod, and she handed each one a heart-shaped lollipop from her I Dream of Jeannie lunchbox in exchange for a folded-up bill, which she slipped into her bra.
Refreshments first, dancing later,
Jenny called out to the group. the vault door led to a basement labyrinth of VIP rooms, mini dance floors, and shadowy nooks. Jenny navigated them to a room cordoned off with a velvet rope, guarded by a goateed man with arms the size of Una's thighs. When he saw Jenny, he unlatched the rope and bent down to let her plant a kiss on his cheek. She slipped a plastic packet into his palm as she ushered them inside. The room was blacklit and painted in floor-to-ceiling Keith Haring murals, neon outlines of sexless people framed in squiggles on a glowing white background. The sweaty, skunky odor of marijuana permeated the space. They headed for an empty banquette. When all were seated, Jenny began to cut more powder on a low glass table. Across the way, a woman in a red leather harness snorted lines off a hand mirror, and in the corner, a group of skinny men in gold hot pants passed around a glass pipe. Be cool. Stop gawking. A tremor of uncertainty coursed through her. A magnum of champagne was brought over, and Desi uncorked it, filling and passing around glasses.
You must be pretty important,
Una said to Jenny.
Oh, yes, darling, she replied. They named the VIP room after me, don't you know? Very important pussy.
Everyone but Una howled with laughter. Their teeth glowed white, faces lit with glee, eyes glittering, bodies decorated like birthday parties on acid. Una brought a glass of champagne to her face and let the bubbles tickle her nose. I don't have to be lonely this year. I have friends. People who like me. A silly giggle to herself, and she joined the group's laughter, magnified by alcohol, drugs, and the need to have an uproarious, fabulous time. And if the real thing evaded them, they had ingredients for artificial fun. Jenny waved an open palm with a flourish, presenting a row of five neat lines. She handed a rolled-up $20 bill to Una.
The prodigal doll goes first once more. Don't leave us for that long again, Missy. The party's not as fun without you.
Was this powder more K or something else? It didn't matter. She belonged here, belonged with them, an imposter as much as the others. Una snorted the line. Her lips, fingers, and toes went numb. This time she floated backward, the room receding into a long, dark tunnel. As the images before her warped, so did the music. It slowed, the vocals fading to nothing, and the bass line pounded